Hello, and welcome to the Architects of Destination Advocacy podcast from Destinations International, the trade association representing destination organizations around the globe, brought to you exclusively by Relic Agency as part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andreas Weisenborn, and welcome you for checking out our podcast. For each episode, we want to tell the story of both usual and unusual suspects in our sector's history and the key advocacy moments for them. These stories are meant to tell the tale in full, covering many of our strategic issues and opportunities our sector faces, whether it be community alignment, destination stewardship, resilience, or actions based on values. We hope you listen in and learn from your peers. With that, let's get to the show. Hello and welcome back. It's actually going to be a nice and short intro today, but first and foremost, I just want to give a massive thank you to everyone who joined us a couple weeks ago in Bloomington, Minnesota for the 2022 Advocacy Summit. Just want to give a massive thank you to everyone who joined us there, our panelists, our participants, those who stood the whole long weekend and went through CDME. It was an incredible experience for us from staff. A lot of cool things were released that hopefully you saw some of the releases, most particularly the Tourism Lexicon, but it was a great, great, great event. But the work doesn't stop there. We did announce, so for 2023, we'll be in Little Rock, Arkansas in the beginning of October for the 2023 Advocacy Summit. So when all our events go live, make sure to catch us there. In addition as well, just wanted to keep some updates regarding other advocacy initiatives. Hopefully you all got the chance to participate and engage on our upcoming committee selection, of which one is the Advocacy Committee. Destination National, I think one of the most important things we do is the volunteerism, which the committees are a huge part of. So please, hopefully, make sure you got a chance to volunteer. I always love and participate volunteerism in our advocacy committee. So please feel free to reach out to me or others at Destination National to learn more about my committee or many of the other ones as part of it. So on to the show. So at the start of 2022, we at Destinations International really outlined 8 strategic issues and opportunities for the sector and around the world, really what we're calling sort of our next normal. Now, the 8th issue was what we outlined as climate change, global warming, and many of the climate crises that are facing our destination organizations or that they find themselves in now. So for some, this actually might be a recent or relatively new challenge they are facing. But for many of our coastal destinations, this has always been part of the gig. And frankly, they have had due diligence to prepare. But actually, at the time of this recording, we are currently watching Hurricane Nicole enter the coast of Florida, of which is really actually only weeks from the prior hurricane of Ian. I thought it was time to bring on an architect to help describe what it's like being at the center of a major natural disaster and the role a destination organization could play. So please welcome to the show, Sergio Piedra, Director of Community Engagement and Advocacy for Discover the Palm Beaches, Florida. Sergio, welcome.
Hello there. It is good to be here to talk about one of my favorite topics and unfavorite topics, hurricanes. So
let's start there. Just before we get into a lot of the meat and potatoes here, just update on you, your family, your community on, you know, where we are with Hurricane Nicole right now.
Right now, on this Thursday morning on the 10th, hurricane, which is now a tropical storm, Nicole, made landfall about 60 miles north of where we are in Palm Beach County, Florida. Near Vero Beach, and is now making its way up 75 to Georgia and dropping rain and some wind across the state. So the good thing is that it seems that it only caused some flooding, but not the catastrophic damage we saw with Hurricane Ian. So the Florida was spared another, you know, barrage of wind and rain and flooding. So, but still, it was not very much fun, put it that way.
Before we get into the fun sort of hurricane stuff, just a little bit, just describe your background, your history actually with Discover the Palm Beaches.
Well, put it this way. When I started out here, I was 28 and single. And now I'm 51 and married with a child. So I spent the last 22 years starting out as a public relations coordinator and working with everything from travel to fun marketing purposes, the content creation, and now community engagement and outreach, and throw in some hurricanes over the years. So I have made a career out of tourism and hospitality, and it has been a good one.
Oh, it's wonderful to hear. I mean, to kind of connect the connective tissue, you were most recently on our panel at our Advocacy Summit on one of the force of being a good. And, you know, I kind of connected with you afterward. I knew about everything that had been transcribing or happened with Hurricane Ian, and you had shared with me the sheer breadth of preparedness and planning and a literal plan of which you described as many pages. And I thought, man, I need to talk to him at length about this, because I think it's not something every organization is fully aware of, or what it takes to withstand a hurricane. But just to back up a little bit on the hurricane aspect, since you noted right now Nicole is no longer a hurricane, it's a tropical storm. How did you get the untimely role of being sort of the hurricane czar for your destination organization?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where it's actually like a two-part answer and two quick answers here. Number one, no one else was doing it. There was a need for it. And something I learned way back in my career before I got into this field, when I worked at the mayor's office of the city of West Palm Beach, was make yourself indispensable. Mm-hmm. And you probably have a good career ahead of you. And there was a need to be like the hurricane guy. And to some degree, it was like a hobby of mine. Not that I'm out there, putting weather balloons in the air, but I'm fascinated by the weather of all kinds, rain, sleet, or snow. And hurricanes was, like I said, there was a need for it in our office. Someone had to be the guy for hurricanes. And I raised my hand a couple times and I said, yes, I'm on board.
So, Sergeant, since you just kind of mentioned the downgrading of tropical storm, not to diminish its damage and what I can cause, but the most recent one with Ian, I kind of wanted to ask, what is sort of the inner workings like at a desertization, knowing at that time, Category 2 to 3 to 4 hurricane is coming at you? What is sort of the inner discussions, group meetings? What is that like at your destination?
Well, this is what makes it interesting for me, and I think that one of the reasons I think it's all about planning. It's all about having a plan and sticking to it. And years ago, when I first started, being the hurricane czar, the hurricane guy, we didn't really have a plan here at Discover the Palm Beaches. And back then, we were called the Convention and Visitors Bureau. And so we had to come up with something. We had to do something, especially in 2004 and 2005, when we saw about 5 hurricanes come across the state. We realized that the hotel community, the hospitality community, the travel industry here locally needed something. So that's where I came up with, and it was my creation, I'll admit it, so that if we call it the Hurricane Action Plan, the HAP for short. And there's several different protocols, different alert levels, and we just fine-tune it after every storm. But the inner workings of it is like everybody, there's about several people in our whole organization who are involved in this. And the object is to leave no stone unturned, to make sure we know, anticipate what's happening as storms approach.
When was the first sort of implementation or trial of like a HAP? I like that. When was the first trial by fire of utilizing the plan?
Well, I think that, we had different versions of it, but I think the first kind of fully realized where we have, I think if I remember correctly, like 7 different stages and alert, 7 different levels, if you will, to it, was about 2017, 2018 timeframe. I can't remember the named hurricane. We'll just say that particular hurricane was bearing down on us, and we went, we're very colorful in our levels, blue level, yellow alert, red alert, storm strike, the recovery stages, and so forth. So I think it was probably, it really took about, believe it or not, from when we first kind of started writing the plan, about 2005, 2006 timeframe, it was kind of a journey, and this is like a long journey, like about 10 years worth of trying different things. Now, some of that is because we didn't have any storms. There wasn't a need for a plan. There wasn't anything out there. After 2004 and 2005, things kind of calmed down a little bit. But then all of a sudden lately, and I would certainly say climate change is involved in this, and the storms have come roaring back. And we know they're out there in these, we've seen vicious Category 5 storms either come right along our shores and miss us by a few miles, or land somewhere in the other parts of Florida. So it was a need.
How would you, I'm sort of curious, you know, obviously you do more than just be a hurricane czar here. You guys are a full functioning destination organization. So sales, marketing, promotion, destination development. Generally speaking, you know, how does staff sort of anticipate a hurricane? Like, are they looking at, say, okay, Sergio says we're only in yellow right now, so I don't need to worry about my day job right now. You know, I'm just sort of curious, how does that inner working kind of work? You work among staff of the normal stuff you do 9 to 5as running a destination organization?
Well, I guess that's where the plan is. We call it the ready stage. Mm-hmm. So, and that's where I'm kind of the coastal watch. I'm not staying out there on the beach with, you know, a pair of binoculars looking out to sea. I can do that on the weekend, but it's to check the hurricane, National Hurricane Center website, you know, what they see, their forecast, what's happening out there. Also, you know, seeing what the locals are saying about something brewing in the tropics, a wave coming and so forth. And once you live in Florida for some time, you start realizing you have to pay attention to those things. And so they'll drop by my office. People will drop by my office and say, what's happening? We know there's something out there. So that's when, you know, I kick into action when there might be a wave or a depression that's forming, which looks like it's coming our way. If you look at those long range models, those famous spaghetti models that you know, have different lines going in different directions. A few of them might be crossing us. So that's when I kind of kick the entire plan to action. And we have what we call the storm emergency team. There's another set, as we call it. And there's about a dozen people involved with that. And usually start our first meeting and say, well, what stage and what's the protocol?
I'm just curious, how many meetings of those did you have during kind of the peak of Ian?
We had one probably like twice a day for about 5 days. So probably like 10-ish meetings, if you will, morning and afternoon. We usually would kind of, you know, time those right when the national hurricane updates would happen. And also like when we felt there was a need, because really at the end of the day, it's our whole plan is about communicating to our partners out there, being like part of the community. Which we serve, you know, we serve a county of 1.5 million people, and there's, you know, 100+ major hotels here, countless attractions, you know, so they lean to us, you know, they get their hurricane plan ready when we say, hey, go, you know, so it's all about communicating to our partners, that something's happening and we're on top of it. So they have full confidence in their DMO.
And that was kind of my next transition point. Obviously, the plan and everything you're talking about is some internal workings and whatnot. But how do you engage with those other critical stakeholders in your community that you represent, work for? But they're also, you know, there's safety in there and whatnot. How do you as the destination work with them during these critical times?
Well, there's a couple of different ways that I can think of right off the bat. Like number one is by simply sending out an email to them. And then it's called like a breaking news email. And I should backtrack a second. Like at the beginning of hurricane season, we usually have a seminar where we invite the hotels and attractions to say, this is the plan. We have a weather person, whether it's a local one, review some from Orlando before, to give us the forecast for the season, and say, this is what to anticipate, when to anticipate it, and so forth. But once we send out the first initial communication, say there's a storm, we're monitoring it, and we're now going to raise our, you know, we're following the steps in our hurricane action plan. Our partners out there, our local partners know what that means. Because like I said, they have seen our communications in the past, you know, that we are consistent of what we're doing. Now, do we know what we're doing half the time? You know, I don't know, but you know, for certain, we try to do our best to inform them, to say, this is what's going to happen. And this is what we're doing about it.
Well, I think what's neat to point out is, I mean, you said you yourself are not out there predicting the weather and telling those stakeholders what the weather is going to be. You are firmly relying on an expert in this field who relays the weather information, but I still think it's important. I mean, in terms of sourcing a solution here, you are bringing so many people to the table to hear that news, but also to source solutions together, you know, which I think is something, you know, you can relate this crisis to other crises, you know, it doesn't have to be weather related, but that behavior of like, you know, how you bring people together, pull up a chair to a table that you either set or bring to another table, I think it's poignant to bring out. And it seems like that the partners in the community seem to respect you all for that and now look to you as that guiding force during these critical times.
Yes. And in fact, one of our vice presidents for group sales during one of our meetings for Hurricane Nicole said to me that one of our major hotels, PGA National Resort, that once we sent out that initial email, believe it or not, and this is, I won't say who this person was at the hotel, they didn't even know something was happening. They just are very busy running a hotel and they didn't know that there was a possible hurricane, you know, brewing off our shoreline, and it was approaching us with, you know, within a few days. I'm not saying that's every hotelier and attraction person out there, but it's good to know that someone A is like reading your email that you send out, and B is actually like, oh, wait a minute, let me listen to what these guys are saying. And they actually felt confident that we knew what we were talking about, and they had to prepare their hotel as well. So that's kind of like the high points of this, you know, and because it is at the end of the day, it's a natural disaster and you don't want any of that, you know, you don't want any part of that. Yeah. I always tell my partners, our partners here, when we have that, conference call or meeting at the beginning of the year, the seminar talking about hurricane season, I always tell them, I hope you don't hear from me at any point during this hurricane season. You know, so, and I mean that very well. I was like, you know, I'm not even calling to say hello, just you don't hear from me, you know, so that's when you have success.
So. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't joking at the beginning when I said just the sheer amount of, you know, prepare you all do. Wanted to ask the flip side of it, you know, once a hurricane, especially something like Ian, which is a category 4, and I'm sure other hurricanes you've experienced, what typically happens once the hurricane's done? Just what is the transition plan or help and support plan that usually occurs after a major event like that in your community?
Well, it depends on, like, number one, if you're the community getting hit, then there's one thing. But like for us, I'll tell you from our point of view, is that, first of all, if it's like Ian is the perfect example, catastrophic damage, obviously to a destination, which we compete against Fort Myers, Naples area, but we're friends at the end of the day. I see mm-hmm. these guys at meetings. I see these guys at conventions. They know me. I know them. So we're frenemies to some degree, I guess you could say. But at the end of the day, we care about each other. So like with Ian, our first things we do is send sympathetic messages out there, but also stop any sort of marketing. All of our marketing on social media, our digital ads, we stopped that. It wasn't like, hey, come see this beautiful part of Florida not affected by the storms. Mm-hmm. We recognized that if it was in our position, we would want them to be respectful for where we are. And secondly, and here's the wild west of all this, is that, and no, I don't want to be one to bash the media, you know, at the end of the day, but they got to make a good story, you know, and they got to make it entertaining. So if they show like a pier, which is missing some, you know, boards, you know, or been washed out to sea, they make it look like that's the entire state of Florida, you know? So we have to counter, that's all in our plan, is to do countermeasures. We have people monitoring social media. We have people monitoring what the news media is saying to kind of counter any measure. If somebody says, hey, Florida is completely closed mm-hmm. because this category 1 storm, Nicole, came through and now is drifting up to Georgia, we have to counter those measures. And so that's part of our plan, but also what we discussed this week is to make sure that, you know, if our destination is open, then we want the world to know about it. But we, you know, we wait a couple of days for everything to kind of stabilize. And then with Hurricane Ian, it was the same thing. We waited about a week to almost 2 weeks before we restarted our marketing purposes. But in the meantime, we had those, you know, our hearts are with you message out there, which they were. And, you know, we donated money to the state's disaster relief fund and encouraged our partners to do so. Because we realized at the end of the day here that, you know, in Florida, we're all in it together. We're coastal destinations here. Even the ones in the middle of the state are only 50 miles, 100 miles from the water. Mm-hmm. So we have to be in it together.
I mean, it's incredibly just honorable and just the sheer amount of respect you're talking about, the pausing of the media and then sales aspects of it. the flip side, I was curious, you were describing about the reopening. What signals and stuff do you look for when you realize, okay, maybe it is safe to start reopening or start to, you know, put the pedal back on promotion and marketing? Like, as you said, let the world know you're open. What do you all look for and what are those indications should be?
You know, sometimes, like in our situation right now of Hurricane Nicole, we actually, the barrier islands, those right off our coastline, where there's a majority of our beach resorts, those were all in evacuation zones, and our evacuation was mandatory. So if there's a government-led effort there to evacuate people, we can't really do any sort of promotion about our beaches. The beaches just reopened today, the day after the storm, this afternoon, about 12 hours after the storm passed. Because we're a quasi-government agency, we follow those cues from the county government to say, okay, you know, the beaches are reopened. The evacuation orders have been rescinded. Those are the easy ones. You know, we know those are official things. Now, the unofficial things out there we know is that we look at cues about people, you know, commenting on our social media and saying, hey, are you open? You know, is it safe to be there? You know, those sort of questions. But also our partners, the hotels, the restaurants, the attractions, they're letting us know that they're reopening. So once they feel safe, we feel safe to go out there and market again. Because we can't just, you know, say, hey, come down to the Palm Beaches and we only have half our hotels open, you know. So if there's damaged hotels, that's one thing. But, you know, we want to be that unifying voice. The DMO is ready to go out there and promote the Palm Beaches again, as long as our partners are ready to do so and the county government.
Yeah, that's what I was asked. Do you ever feel like there's ever a disconnect that, or it sounds like everyone's pretty much unison of like when this is ready to go versus people pushing you saying, no, open now, you know, battle this per se.
Yeah, you know what? It's one of those things where it surprises you with these guys that they're more unified than you think. During COVID, it was all over the map. You know, people wanted to be open or closed. I won't even get into that discussion. But with hurricanes, you know, the object is to get going back, you know, as quickly as possible. You know, if the beaches are open and you have a beachfront hotel, by all means, open up the doors again. Mm-hmm. Now, it does come down to making sure that it's safe out there. We certainly don't want hotel staff, attraction staff to be driving through, you know, dangerous situations on the road. So that's where, you know, we ask the county government, you know, is it safe to drive the streets? You know, is it okay for people to go out there and, you know, start making a living again? And these things, you know, everyone knows that tourism, at least in this county, you know, is the second largest industry. So that industry wants to move quick and be back out there. And we feel as a DMO, we lead that economic charge. So we're ready to, you know, to sound the, you know, the bell and say, hey, we're open again. You know, once we start hearing from our partners.
Wonderful. I mean, I know, obviously, when you're not battling hurricanes, you have advocacy in your title. And I know this past year, you guys rolled out, very aptly titled, you know, a community shared value engagement plan for your destination organization. I kind of want to talk just a little bit about that. I mean, I think a lot of organizations now coming out of the pandemic, I don't think we're, you know, say the pandemic's over, are looking at what does a modern day engagement plan, advocacy plan, promotion, marketing, strategic plan, what have you, about tying back to the community and how we perceive ourselves. I kind of wanted to hear, just because I know you were the origin and architect for much of that at your destination, how that started, the rollout, and how you've seen it perceived with your community.
You know, it's being an advocate for the industry seems easy, but you really have to, you know, when you're a tourism destination like this one, it seems like it's, oh, you know, everyone's going to fall in line and say tourism's great. You know, it's a great way, but we have to remind people how much influence we have in the economics of a county like ours. As we kind of started building this idea of a community shared value, which we firmly believe in, is that we had to remind people, it's like, hey, you know, after, and I experienced this after 9/11, after the Great Recession, how did our county recover? By being a tourism destination. And now with COVID, it was like, how's our county going to recover? Because we're a tourism destination. That's the first industry. So that was all part of our message. That's our initial message, is that all along during moments of crisis, the tourism industry is the fastest way to recover. And so that was our community shared value. That was our approach. That was our beginning message to remind our opening salvo, if you will, to the locals, was remind them that we can start bringing money back into the community by inviting visitors back in. So that was kind of how we started rolling things out. But you know, the long and short of that is that they respond to that message. And we've taken that message, not just to our partners, but also to economic business people in our community. From chambers of commerce, we have a dozen, which is another story here. Our business development board, our CRAs, our downtown development authorities, we've taken that message out to them and reminded them the importance of tourism in this community.
Absolutely. I mean, Sergio, I just want to thank you again so much for being on. Kind of the final question I wanted to ask you was, you know, you mentioned, you know, 9/11, the recession, the pandemic, all of which everyone experienced, but you are unique in a few others of also now experiencing national disaster crises as part of being a coastal destination. What do you think makes you guys so resilient and so adept to handle crisis after crisis? You know, I know it's, I'm not trying to moan, it's not stressful, but hearing your tone, timbre, a 30-page plan, I mean, you would be who I would look to in this type of situation, crisis. What do you think some of those key characteristics are for making you guys so resilient to handle these crises?
You know what? It's a very simple answer, is have a plan and stick to it. Now, I will be honest with you, when COVID initially started raising, you know, above the surface there, we tried to implement our hurricane plan and try to convert it to, you know, to deal with COVID, but that got off the rails pretty quick. But that being said, you push forward in this industry with a plan, and we gather the confidence of our tourism industry here because we've been delivering that community shared value message to them as well. And that makes us resilient at the end of the day, is that everybody responds to economics. And once you say, hey, I can put money back in the community. And then they're like, huh, what? You know, like, wait a minute. You know, so that's the best thing. It's just you push forward. You have a plan and you push forward.
Well said. Sergio, thank you so much for being on. Where can people find you, get a hold of you if they need to see your 30-page plan?
Yes, I'm more than happy to share it with everyone, with anyone. I have certainly done that with several other destinations. We bounce ideas back with each other. But I'll give you my phone number and email. That can be reached at directly in my office, 561-233-3035, or SPIEDRA at thepalmbeaches.com. And I'll be happy to talk hurricanes until, you know, the cows come home.
Wonderful. So everyone, please, thank you again for joining myself, Andreas Weiseborn, and Sergio today on this month's episode of the Architects of Destination Advocacy. Please make sure to subscribe within your podcast listening service to always catch the latest episode. To learn more about the work we do, please make sure to subscribe to our newsletter at destinationsinternational.org, or check out our content through the advocacy section at the website or speaking at one of our upcoming events. Thank you, and we'll talk soon.